You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
That the word jazz means many different things to many different people. So check out the real deal on The Jazz Show at CITR 101.9 FM or CITR.ca for live streaming. Yours truly, Gavin Walker, is your host, and I guarantee the straight goods of 3 hours of jazz at its finest. The jazz feature that focuses on a concept, an album, or an individual artist will be heard at the beginning of the show every Monday night right at 9 p.m. after our opening theme and announcement. So come on by and give your ears a musical workout, 9 p.m. Mondays. Don't miss it. CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Good morning, and you're listening to the Community Living Radio. And it is Michael Rubin. Kelly is still out on assignment. We expect him to be back in the next couple weeks. So we were supposed to have a guest today, and I guess she's running late. I got a text message saying that she had another meeting to get to, and she'll try to join us as soon as possible. So meanwhile, we're going to listen to something from Fibromom. Talking about some of the symptoms of fibromyalgia and how it can affect your life. So let's go on with the clip, and hopefully that our guest will be with us shortly.
Symptoms. symptoms of fibromyalgia. And if you are wondering if you have fibro or if you have some strange and unusual symptoms that you don't know if it's normal for other people who have fibro, this is the video for you. And if I don't say the thing that you're looking to hear, leave a comment in the section below and I will get back to it and answer it. All right, so I actually made notes because I didn't want to forget the important fibro-related symptoms. And why would I forget it, you'd ask? Well, that leads to our very first symptom, brain fog. Brain fog is not being able to think about anything sometimes. It's like you took cotton and wrapped it around your brain and everything is trying to like penetrate in through that cotton and you're trying to think through what's happening. I don't know what's going on in there, but it's like a jambalaya. I mean, it's just like all mixed up. And it's hard sometimes to access words. Like, yes, English is my first language, but not when my fibro fog is out of control. You know what I'm saying? Second symptom. Really, this should probably be the first symptom. Again, fibro fog. But diffuse pain. This is not pain like, oh, I stubbed my toe, oh, I broke an arm, oh, I just had major surgery. All of those are, there's no doubt there's pain involved in differing levels, but with fibromyalgia, the pain just does not go away. And it's not, most of the time, it's not sharp and stabbing. It's kind of more spread out and all over. And, you know, really, the slightest things can cause pain. Like, oh, I think I'm going to touch your skin. No, I guess I'm not, because it hurts like a mother. Sometimes, like, my scalp hurts. My eyelashes hurt. I mean, just like the most ridiculous. Anything that is soft tissue can hurt. That's fair game for fibromyalgia. So if you have, when I was first diagnosed, my biggest problems were I had head and neck pain, shoulder pain, and then it ran down my spinal column. And then my PMS was awful. I mean, like I'm having a baby kind of PMS. And so pretty much fibromyalgia, it's a state of hypersensitization to pain. That's kind of what it is. Your nervous system is running amok. And you perceive things to be painful that should not be painful to anybody. That's just the deal. So, diffuse pain. The doctor will tell you that there are 18 tender points to check on your body. But for layman's purposes, which I'm assuming we both are, it's pretty much just a lot of pain over like 50% or more of your body. For like, I don't know, more than a month or two or three. Like it does not go away. All right, so another thing is exhaustion. Exhaustion, exhaustion, exhaustion. I'm not talking about being tired. I'm talking about being exhausted just walking up a flight of stairs or waking up and feeling like you haven't slept. If you've had the flu, then you kind of know what that feels like, where your body hurts all over, and then you just are so tired because your body is like, I'm gonna get this illness and make you better. But that doesn't actually, that's not what happens with fibromyalgia. But your nervous system is on overdrive, so of course you are tired. I take a nap most days, and I try to get regular sleep at night, but that's another symptom of fibromyalgia, is poor sleep or disturbed sleep. And my sleep is, well, when I'm not taking medicine for it, I don't sleep well at all. I'm up regularly. And especially if you have pain, the pain wakes you up too. And the less you sleep, the worse you feel. So that's kind of fun. All right, next symptom. Here's something that's interesting. Again, because your central nervous system is involved, all of your senses can be amplified. So sounds, light, smell, taste, touch, all of your senses. It's sort of like being raw in a way. It's like as if somebody had just kind of peeled back a layer of skin and just everything is like, I don't even know what that's, I can't even figure out what that is exactly, what to compare that to. If you've, you know what, okay, I have an idea. If you are in a classroom and somebody is using chalk to write on the board and they scratch their nails down the board and you go, ew, like that, you know, that kind of, actually that gives me goosebumps just thinking about it. That is similar to the feeling of having your nerves set on edge. So anyway, so your senses can easily be overwhelmed, bombarded. Light, I am seriously light sensitive. I have to block out the light, or sometimes I get a migraine. I can't take strong smells. I stop being able to wear perfume. What else? Sounds, I can't take loud sounds anymore. So, I mean, my music is pretty quiet, and that's actually kind of a bad thing because I've also recently realized that as I age, my hearing is going. I don't know. I'm falling apart. All right, now I want to talk a little bit about some other things that happened to me and probably happened to a lot of other people too. Well, the thing about fibromyalgia is that it affects everybody differently. A whole host of things can also be happening in addition to these things, these first things. The thing that has happened to me a lot is sensitive skin. You know, we were talking earlier about system sensitivity. So, I mean, if you just look at me, I get a rash. Seriously, it's ridiculous. I have no idea why. I'm allergic to all kinds of stuff. Detergents and, I don't know, soaps. It's not as bad as it used to be, but I have sensitive skin. Yeah, there's no two ways about it. So sensitive skin. I have a really hard time regulating my body temperature. So I can go from sweating to freezing in a matter of moments. And again, that's one of those internal system things where your body is super sensitive to anything that happens. That includes heat. I know that for a lot of people with fibromyalgia, they have trouble digesting food. And that can be because you have some kind of coexisting disorder like IBS or some motility disorder with your digestive system so that your stomach doesn't digest the food. It doesn't go through it just kind of sits there, which is what happens with mine, which is fun. Fun party trick. And so that's, you have to plan for that. In fact, I'll make a video about how to deal with digestive issues because it's a regular part of my life. So anyway, and I don't know if you realize this, I certainly didn't until I had fibro. You have muscles that move your food from your mouth all the way out. And again, any place that has soft tissue is fair game for pain. So there's nothing really like having pain all the way through your body while you're digesting food. Fun. Good stuff. Anyway, so trouble digesting food, and as a consequence of that, plus medications, plus inactivity, weight gain. I would say that since I was diagnosed, I've probably put on 50 pounds. And I am surprised, frankly, that I just said that. And it may or may, I can't talk. That's how upsetting it is to me that I said that. It may or may not make it through the editing process, but it is not unusual, and that is not a giant amount. I mean, the medications that you take are essentially they slow your system down and do other things that even doctors and pharmacy companies don't understand, pharmaceutical companies don't understand, and it causes weight gain. What are you going to do? Run the Boston Marathon? No, you're not. I mean, there are degrees of fibromyalgia, and so, you know, on one side there are people who aren't affected as severely and they are more active, which is great. And on the other side, there are people who are severely affected, like me, who spend literally I spend 3/4 of my day in bed. That's no joke. Actually, I spend it on the bed because I make my bed and I sit on top of it so that I kind of have a little Jedi mind trick there to keep me from thinking about the fact that I'm in bed. But I truly am limited physically in that way. So, weight gain, it's part of it. I think I said earlier that I got migraines, but I can get a migraine from smell, from light, from sound. I also have celiac or a gluten sensitivity, and that can give me a migraine if I accidentally get glutenized. And once that happens, I mean, if you are a migraine sufferer, you know how migraines feel to begin with. So you pair that with fibromyalgia and all bets are off. In fact, I think fibromyalgia is kind of like a migraine for your body. The other thing, and the last thing that I'm going to mention is poor coordination. And this has been something that's been difficult for me to adjust to because I was very active. I played sports all through high school. I ran. I, you know, did all kinds of physically active things that involved coordination. And once I was diagnosed, or once I started to get sick, my coordination just, it was the pits, really. It was awful. In the very beginning, I would trip over my own feet all the time. I would fall regularly. I'd just like be walking, all of a sudden, blam, I couldn't get everything to function. You know, in a way, it was weird, almost like being drunk, but not nearly as fun. Like, not nearly as fun. But I still have problems with that. I kind of trip around, I spill stuff on myself all the time. I have to be very careful when I'm cooking with the knife. I can easily cut myself. I cut and burn myself regularly while I'm cooking. Not on purpose. But while I'm cooking. And so, yeah, I have to deal with that. It's a weird thing. It affects your coordination and your depth. It's almost like it affects your depth perception, you know? Ooh, like that? Yeah. Anyway, so those are the symptoms of fibromyalgia. I take medication regularly, as I've said, and it does help me get to a point where I can be functional to a degree. A lot of my time is spent here in my house, and because I'm severely affected by the weather, the sun, blah, 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 fill in the blank. And so that's one of the reasons why I started the Health Adjacent channel and blog, because I found a lot of ways to have a full life, to make things easier, to really enjoy myself. And I mean, if it helps anybody, whether you're living with fibromyalgia or not, well, then that's a good thing. And I'm happy with my life. I love my family, and I'd say that I feel better about my life right now than I have in a very long time. And man, that positive outlook makes everything just a little bit easier. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Cool. Okay. Again, if you have any questions, please leave them in the comment section. If you liked it, please give it a thumbs up. Like this video, thumbs up. And if you are at all interested, subscribing, you know, I mean, I'm just saying, a little subscription. I don't know why I did that. I'm DJing now suddenly. Okay. All right. Hey guys, have a good one. Talk to you later. Adios.
And that was a bit of a discussion on some of the symptoms of fibromyalgia. And I have friends that have fibromyalgia, and trust me, the brain fog is real. And some of the emotional ups and downs that they experience because, hey, I just want to get up and get some stuff done, you know, sort of thing, does kind of eventually drag on a person when they can't. So we need to get to a station break here and some business. You're listening to Community Living Radio on the NCRA networks and here on CITR in Vancouver, 101.9 FM.
Music Waste and CITR are proud to announce the 2016 Victory Square Block Party. This free day of music features Morning Coup, Milk, Jody Glenham and the Dreamers, SBDC, Pale Red, and Tough Customer. There's good tunes, good food, raffle prizes, and more.
Yeah. I ain't trying to sleep.
So come down to Victory Square this September 4th from 2 to 9 p.m. For more information, go to victorysquareblockparty.com.
Shuttle is going 2 times the speed of sound at the moment.
Folk Club and BC Entertainment Hall of Fame proudly presents the Special Pioneer Awards in order to celebrate those who represent artistic excellence in British Columbia. This year's inductees are folk musician Linda McRae and longtime CITR programmer Steve Edge. The awards ceremony and concert will feature performances from Thad Beckman and Linda McRae. The event will take place on September 4th, 7:30 p.m. at St. James Hall. Tickets will be sold for $24 each.
Oh, man.
And you're still listening to Community Living Radio here on the NCRA networks. I'm Michael Rubin, and we're going to continue more with the fibromyalgia theme. And I'm going to play some clips from the Just One More Step 2016 Walk to Banff and some of the political figures that that we ran into while we wait for our guests to come.
Thank you for joining us, team. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah.
That's okay. Nice seeing you.
And it didn't rain on you?
No, and we don't mind the weather. It's nice.
Mm-hmm. Are your feet holding up?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. You know.
Got the right shoes on?
Yes, I do.
Today
we've got some of our support groups joining us here. Yes, they're coming. They're walking with us right now, some of them.
Yep.
That's awesome.
So you're spread out at different points on the walk?
Well, as they're able to join us, they do. Okay, our groups are up there. We have an abstinence support group. And Lanny, of course, Lanny support group. Holt's going to turn out. And then Princeton. So we've kind of got people joining us along the way. Yeah, some stats, what they can do. Now our rigs are already ahead of us, so they'll join us there as well. We have three motorhomes with us,
Exposure.
Yes. Oh, we're hoping so. Okay, what is he doing? Okay, we can go.
All right. Out of your way too.
Ways now, all the way backwards. Okay, that was Cheryl Young, and she was walking alongside MLA John Martin in Chilliwack. And this next clip, it was shot in Abbotsford with one of the city council members in Abbotsford, and she has some heartfelt things to say about fibromyalgia and the symptoms.
By most other doctors, patted on the head, out the door, it's all in your head here, here's some Valium beyond your way. And Dr. Sweeney said, no, it's not in your head, there's something very serious going on here. He was ostracized, he was ridiculed, he was reprimanded for trying to demand more research and for them to take this seriously and say, because I guess it tends to mostly affect women, am I correct about that? Yeah. So, I don't know, maybe that's part of the reason why he got patted on the head. And, but he fought for you. I guess you don't know that, but Dr. Sweeney, he's retired now. But he fought for you 25 years ago to be taken seriously. And I forget how many years ago, but it wasn't that long ago where finally the medical community was taking it seriously. And I remember the day I read that article.
Yes.
So that clip was shot in front of the Abbotsford City Hall. And here by the horn blows and everything, we were actually getting some people's attention. And they were acknowledging what the whole thing was about. Letting us know with the horn blast that they were starting to understand the awareness needed for invisible illnesses and fibromyalgia. So that was the one clip from Abbotsford. And then this next one is a 5-minute clip from Cheryl Young being interviewed by Global TV Kelowna.
I'm out of frame, right?
Sorry? Yeah, okay.
Okay, good.
Okay, so first of all, let me just see. Okay, I need to get your name and certificate spelling, please.
Yes, I'm sure I can. Cheryl Young, Cheryl Young, Young. Yes.
And what are you doing here?
Today we're just right in front of the city of Kelowna. Introducing ourselves to say that we're walking to Banff to create awareness for invisible illnesses like fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, depression, high blood pressure, whole loss, MS, whatever needs to be told. Because we look good, and people don't understand that sometimes we just don't feel good, and that's most of the time. So we're just out there creating awareness, also getting donations because of the rigs of gas prices went up. So we're okay, but we're just making a difference and letting people know we're out here walking to create awareness for invisible illnesses this morning. So we're having a great time. It's day 18 on the road. We're gonna be hitting Banff in about day, 32. So we're still a long way to go just to create awareness, walking through all the cities, towns, villages, and just letting them know we're here. And we want to be people to come and say hi because we're just talking about whatever we're talking about. We have stories, all kinds of neat stories. We're talking about how people are gaining their confidence with this walk. We have people that had to step in. I couldn't walk for a few days, so they stepped up to the plate, did their 1K, 2K, whatever. They were impressing themselves. They're proud of themselves. So it's about just getting out there, getting them out of their home, taking that one step needed to make their life a little bit better. So that's what we're about.
Okay, so what are the details of your walk then? You know, how far are you walking, that kind of thing?
Every day we plan between 25 clicks and 30 clicks, depends on where we go. Today we're going to the UBC campus, where some of our walkers will be staying there, thanking the UBC campus there. Some of us will be staying in the rigs that looks like Walmart tonight, because we had thought we were all going to stay there, but we can't stay in our rigs there. So we're going to look for a Walmart and talk to them nicely, and maybe they'll let us stay there. So that's going to really wonderful.
Okay, in terms of how far you're walking, where you're walking from, where you're walking to.
Okay, we started in Langley. Actually, Global was there as well when we took our first day, and we were very amazed to see that. And so the first day we did our tour, it was a long day, 30 clicks. And so Banff will be the longest. So every day it's 1,100 kilometers we're walking, plus extra steps along the way. So we started with 17, we're down to 10 solid people. My cousin Heather and Glenn live in Winfield. They joined us today, so that was nice. We want people to join us. We want to come in and just to show the support that we're...
And again, you're listening to Community Living Radio here on the NCRA networks, and also we're here on CITR in Vancouver, 101.9 FM.
On Labor Day weekend, September 2nd to the 4th, it's the Bumbershoot Festival 2016 in Seattle, Washington. The festival's got a little something for everyone, with music, comedy, arts, culture, and food. Featuring Chastity Belt, So Pitted, Dude York, Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, Death Cab for Cutie, and more. Passes are on sale now, so head on over to Bumbershoot.com.
What?
What?
I really wanted to catch that football game, but I have to clean my room. I'm so bummed.
Yo, man, totally chill out. You can catch it on CITR.
CITR?
Did someone say CITR?
Yeah.
CITR Radio brings you Thunderbird Sports on the weekends. Catch all the action and don't miss a moment of play with our live play-by-play and color commentary. Only on CITR 101.9 FM.
Wow,
that's great.
And if you can't catch the game, tune in at 3:30 p.m. every Thursday for our weekly update on UBC Athletics with live scores, recaps, and in-depth analysis.
Oh, okay, dude. Okay, dude. We get it.
Dude!
Only on CITR.
I am a Sirius Rhythm Machine. Now try.
Okay, and we're back. And our guest has just called in. And her name is Rita Conte, and she's going to talk to us about some of the effects that disabilities have on the workplace. And she's actually focused most of her community on improving the lives of those recovering from street life, children showing courage and battling illnesses in the Canuck Place Hospice. But she's also going to talk to us about some of the debilitating things that can happen from low iron. And how much of that was accurate, Rita?
Well, definitely. I mean, I've done some voluntary work with helping Canuck Hospice as a family peer support worker, and as well with Covenant Health, serving hot meals and helping improve the lives of young kids on the street and, you know, recovering addicts. Basically, that I found a lot of reward in helping others. And when we look at disabilities, there's many different forms of disabilities. And taking that to more of a common disability, and I've experienced at personal level, is one of iron deficiency. I think with iron deficiency, a lot of people don't realize this, how that impacts your day-to-day life. And I've noticed that over the years, when it wasn't really resolved, or the system didn't really be as proactive with the condition, meaning our hospital system, having blood infusions, looking at alternative medicine, such as vitamin C injections, all of these things that actually will help boost your low iron. These things, there's a cost to them. They're not covered through the medical system. At least blood infusions are. Other methods are not, that are considered non-scientific. And in having this problem and how it impacts your ability to work and focus and do work accurately, also communicate with people at a very clear level, there's a problem with that when you have this iron deficiency, and I've realized that in my own life. Mm-hmm. And what I'm getting at is, in having that problem, it seems that if it's not recognized by the system as one that actually could be looked at as a disability, in the sense where it prevents you from sustaining reliable work, or you maintaining a job for a long period of time, it impacts your income ability. It impacts your lifestyle. And it will also impact eventually how you're going to communicate with other people in the workplace if there's some sort of mood impact that iron deficiency can have on a person's outlook and personality. So I just believe that with this condition, which is common among very many people, specifically women at a certain age with the loss of iron, there has to be more awareness. And I think even in the workplace, you know, with certain professions, when you have this, there's times where you're going to have to, say, use the system and go get blood infusions, or you are going to have to go get naturopath. Who's going to pay for the naturopath? Who pays for that cost? And this is all down to income. But when a person is not earning income that sustains them over a long period of time, and yet there's a condition that actually is prevailing and doesn't allow them to actually maintain that income through continuous work, that becomes a problem because they no longer can afford those things to help them get back to a really healthy state physically and mentally with this condition of low iron. And I realized that myself. And only now am I actually using the resources that the system, the medical system has, iron infusions, using those. Definitely was something I'm doing now, but I wasn't aware of that in the past, nor was that advised to me by my own family doctor in the last 5 years. And I think that's something that GMs really need to, or at least need to focus on with their own patients that have this type of condition. And I've also realized that in having certain type of professions that also allow you to work around that treatment process, and professions that have regularity in work hours, you know, not shift work and not seasonal work, rather regular employment that gives you a stable day-to-day hourly schedule or weekly schedule. So I found all these things predominantly made a difference in how I'm treating my low iron and as right. well at one point anemia, but I don't have anemia anymore. But that's not a big issue with women, is the anemia level, trying to keep that high as well, because that affects your energy, your ability to wake up every day and be active and be able to perform the things you need to do at home, outside of your home, you know, mm-hmm. physically staying healthy through exercise. And that's all part of it. That all impacts yeah. what you could do day to day.
Yeah, you know, it is a very common problem. Low iron deficiency or low hemoglobin also, which my girlfriend has low hemoglobin. And I remember New Year's, I think it was 2014, being called into the doctor, called into emergency because she had to have a blood transfusion. But she's and there's my sister has had anemia as well as my mother, so it is very common thing, and it's something that that isn't really you're right, it isn't recognized as any type of disability. And it has affected each of the ladies I know that had it, has affected their ability to work. So, what do you think could happen to improve this?
Well, I mean, I think it's part of you know, your stresses in life too. I think to improve this, mm-hmm. You have to have these stresses released. I mean, you really need to have a stable lifestyle where, you know, work and employment come together with health, you know, mental health, physical health, financial health, and in the end, it's spiritual health. So all these things have to only improve through a system that we live in socially, specifically a system that allows or provides more employment. It provides sustainable employment, specifically for women. That, say, are educated, you know, have extreme skills, you know, have great experience behind them. But for some reason in the marketplace, they still can't find this opportunity here. And I think the only way it's going to change in terms of, say, the condition or these type of conditions from, say, being managed in terms of resources, and I'm referring to financial resources that will help overcome the condition through vitamins, through proper food, extremely proper food, high iron foods, through alternative supplements, through vitamin C injections that you take through naturopath options. I think all of these things have to start becoming more of a focus and more of a concern. And only through income levels changing and sustainable lifestyles being provided and people working hard for this, but through a government system in our province that recognizes there needs to be better employment opportunities for people within a certain age bracket. Okay. Let's not forget this age bracket that we're seeing primarily with this condition. It's women that get older. I'd say women between, 35 and 50. You know, this is where they're starting to change. Their bodies change.
Right.
So, and that's where you really need to see, okay, the system really support programs where there's better job resource centers for women to really get those skills that they need. If they need to go back to school, they need to upgrade to bring their income level at a normal standard so they could have a decent lifestyle that have conditions such as this. Mm-hmm. That is the only way you're going to see these conditions improve. And I'm referring not to the medical side. I'm referring more to the social sustainability side.
Right.
And the economic side.
Yeah. Yeah. Diet is very much so a problem with our society as it is, and the fact that we don't necessarily get good food here in North America. You know, we don't get it's all boxed or fast food, right? And that's not necessarily going to support an iron deficiency.
Well, I think it's a way of eating. I mean, I know for myself, it's always been a healthy eating style, like your lifestyle and how you eat and how you cook and what you make. Mm-hmm. That's all part of getting the right foods. I think the really key issue is to get organic food or a lot of good greens. Now that we see in the grocery markets or at the farmers markets, they're not cheap. Food prices have gone up, mm-hmm. especially for produce and high quality food. You pay quite a bit for that. And now people are using alternatives. You know, people are growing their own garden, and there's community gardens. And I will tell you, that's a great way to improve your health. It's a bit of work, but it's a great hobby to take up if you have the space or you're able to even do a community garden. And again, there's a cost to that you have to contribute to do that. So again, those type of programs, say funded by government, funded by organizations such as the YWCA, nonprofits that really focus on food growth and food integrity and quality that goes with fitness and health. Mm-hmm. Are all programs that I think people could opt into as long as it's people are aware of it and it's advertised. I think it's also the fact that, yes, here we have fast food, but compared to other parts of the world, or let's compare ourselves to the United States, I think here in Vancouver, here in Canada, I think we are very healthy eaters. I think our quality of food compared to other countries, and I'm going to refer to the States. You know, we have, for example, you know, in our milk, we have no hormone components in it as much as the U.S. does. With our quality of meats, are very, very high in terms of levels of steroids put into the meats and chemicals that, you know, basically are pumped into our food chains, specifically with poultry and red meat. So I think we're getting there. I think we definitely are moving forward with quality food in comparison to, say, the United States. Absolutely, in comparison to Europe, Europe has a complete advantage, because in Europe, their food, for one, is all organic. they grow their food naturally.
Mm-hmm.
Well, their standards are different than ours.
Yeah,
completely
in Europe,
different than ours.
Yeah, in Europe, they don't have factory farms, or very few factory farms. Whereas
you're right.
in
That's right.
Canada, doesn't have near as many factory farms as the U.S. does. But there again, there's a much larger population, so
Absolutely.
where they can get. You know, I guess I'm going to stand on a soapbox on this one. Is my thing is that food is meant to be grown in the dirt.
Exactly. Oh, so much so. You're so right. it's meant to be grown in the dirt. I mean, it's not meant to be grown in in artificial little blocks of space that where you're not getting the real soil and the nutrients from the soil that really is needed. And you know, people will say, well, soils aren't clean. I mean, we've got polluted soils now. You know, mm-hmm. we look at a lot of the earth that, you know, is being polluted, say, by chemicals being brought through land areas of, say, waste and chemical waste and industrial waste while going through our water systems or through our land systems. But let's go down to the nitty-gritty. I mean, realistically, I agree with you. The farming industry is huge. And I think with the amount of land, accessible land that could be farmed, and using that land, say, over industrial development or commercial development, mm-hmm. that definitely needs to be more of a focus, because in Europe, farmers are highly, how do you say, they're somewhat, if I'm correct, subsidized. And they're also highly respected in terms of what they contribute to society, and very, very good quality food. And not that Canadian farmers are not, but there definitely has to be more incentives through government programs to have farming at the highest standard as possible. Because you do need farms. You do need food grown out of the soil and dirt. And that's where people have to go back to their old ways. And that's how food was grown way back in the day when we didn't have all the technology and all the other priorities for land use.
Well, you brought up community farms. That would help a lot to have if we were able to utilize a community farm or a backyard farm, Just a little, I'm not farm, I mean garden, right? The community gardens for all that. That would help out a lot, don't you think?
Oh, it would, extremely. And we see that now. We see that in mm-hmm. Kitsilano. We see community farms popping up, or community land popping up in different communal areas, specifically with, you know, development, land developers. They're putting some, you know, parts of that project as communal gardening as part of the development project. So seeing more of that is great. And I think that also as housing prices continue to escalate or going down where the market brings them, you know, affordability to have space. And I think this is something that is a huge issue, is that in the day when people could afford a home and there was land and there was ability to put a garden in your backyard, while now housing prices are so high that you're not seeing that ability for people to do that unless they move further out and they're not first-time home buyers. Well, if they're first-time home buyers, they're going to have to move out. And if they move out, how far do they go to be able to have that lifestyle of growing their own vegetables, their own fruits, if they're, you know, if that's what they choose, in terms of not being able to afford to actually buy that quality of food, living in a condo complex or in the city urban lifestyle that we have here in the heart of Vancouver.
Yeah. Well, we're just about out of time. So thanks for joining us this morning. And thank
you're
you
welcome.
For, it's like you brought up a few really good points, especially with the community garden and to help us improve our food and some of the issues around iron deficiency. Like I said, I've known several women that have had it, and and they all hit about the same age group when hormone changes happen. So thanks for joining us, Rita, and hopefully we can have you back at another time when you can we can have at least a half hour segment with you. Okay?
Absolutely. That sounds great.
All right.
Well, you have a great day, and thank you for having me on your show.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So that is it for today. Look forward to your own local programming on the NCRA networks. And look here at CITR. There'll be another programming coming up soon. Okay. So everybody have a great day, and we'll see you next week.